It's Wednesday, May 20th. I'm Jane Costin, and this is What A Day, the show celebrating Louisiana Republican Senator Bill Cassidy's new career as a big ol' hater. Since he lost his primary last weekend, Cassidy has said he would vote against funding President Donald Trump's ballroom and voted to support Democrats' resolution to limit Trump's war powers. Hate, hate, hate. On today's show, Shvavna. Oh, sorry, you couldn't follow that? That was me trying to talk over the sound of the White House ballroom construction. And Trump makes an endorsement Republicans did not ask for. But let's start with America's public health system and what it is and isn't equipped to handle right now. The World Health Organization met on Tuesday in Geneva, Switzerland, to discuss a deadly outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Uganda. According to the WHO, the outbreak, which has killed more than 130 people and infected more than 500, could last for months. And those numbers could be much, much higher than what officials have been able to determine. Trump is also concerned about Ebola. Well, as concerned as he gets about things that don't involve him personally. Here he is on Monday.
Should Americans be concerned about Ebola?
I'm concerned about everything, but certainly am. I think that, it's been confined right now to Africa, but it's something that has had a breakout.
The Ebola outbreak comes in the midst of another outbreak you've probably heard a lot about, hantavirus. It's part of a family of extremely dangerous viruses that are primarily spread by rats and mice. It also infected 11 people on what became one of the worst sightseeing cruises ever. Three people died, and now many of the ship's passengers are in quarantine. And with all this going on in public health, you might be wondering, hey, who is running the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention? And who is the Surgeon General of the United States? The answer to both, no one who has been confirmed by the Senate. So what is going on with the American public health system right now? To find out, I spoke to Apoorva Mandavilli. She's a science and global health reporter at the New York Times. Apoorva, welcome to What A Day.
Thanks for having me.
Since Trump took office, the U.S. public health apparatus has been decimated. There's a lot of leadership missing in the CDC, including the head of the CDC. We still don't have a Surgeon General. How is the U.S. public health system operating right now compared to 2 years ago?
Not very well. They are doing okay in that the CDC does have a lot of staff scientists who've been there a long time, who know what they're doing, and they can still sort of keep the ship moving. But not having a permanent head of the CDC who can lobby for the agency, who can liaise with the White House and with the Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., that's a real disservice to the agency. And they also have lost hundreds and hundreds of employees who would be useful in certain situations like in infectious disease outbreaks. And so they are not doing as well as they could be.
So something about the U.S. public health system that is a little different from some other countries, it's decentralized. Can you explain quickly how all of these agencies work together and what happens when there are budget cuts or these big cuts of scientists and just missing officials? What does it look like when it's supposed to work? And what does it look like right now when it's not working well?
So I think one thing people don't realize about the CDC is that most of the CDC's budget actually goes immediately out the door to states and local health departments. The CDC doesn't keep that money. And so when you cut the CDC's budget, you're actually cutting the budget for Americans' public health services all across the country. And in fact, often it's the red states who are really dependent on federal funding that are going to suffer the most. So I've spoken to officials at state health departments in places like Alabama and Mississippi who talk about how much harder it is for them to do their job because they've had to fire a lot of their own people because of the funding cuts that they've experienced.
Of course, this is the Trump administration, so more changes to the public health system are on the way. He recently nominated new candidates for both CDC director and Surgeon General. Who are they?
Well, so we know very little about them because neither of them seems to have been particularly well known before they were nominated. Nicole Safier, who's the current nominee for Surgeon General, is a Fox News commentator, but she's a radiologist. And when my colleagues reached out to some radiologists to ask about her, they were told that those folks had never heard of her. So she's probably best known in her commentator role. We do know a lot about what she thinks about various things because she's been in this role and she's said various things about, you know, vaccines, about, you know, Tylenol and autism, the connection that President Trump had tried to make. We know that, for example, she does seem to support some childhood vaccines and thinks that measles vaccine is important, but she also is a big proponent of the idea of, you know, medical freedom and people being able to choose, at least for some vaccines like hepatitis B, that they should be able to decide. And so she's somewhere in the middle, I would say, seems more pro-vaccine and more into the idea of immunization on a broad scale than a lot of people that have been associated with Mr. Kennedy before.
Can you tell me a little bit about this the potential CDC director?
Yeah. So Erica Schwartz was a Coast Guard in the Coast Guard for many years. She was a doctor. Again, in the public health world, no one I know seems to have heard of her. They all think she has great credentials. They're excited about the fact that she's an MD. She has studied, you know, biotechnology. She's studied law. She seems to have a very broad background. She did serve in the first Trump administration. She was in charge of some of the testing during the early in the pandemic. And I've spoken to Trump administration officials from that term who said she was great. And that she seemed to really think very, you know, carefully about things, and that when she didn't think something was right, she did seem to speak up. At the same time, some public health experts I've talked to point out that, you know, she was in the military overall and that in certain circumstances, she may just be inclined to carry out orders that come from above because that's what happens in the military in general. And so it's not clear exactly how she would serve. And, you know, she has really been a mystery to me because I know a lot of people in the public health world, and to encounter someone that no one seems to have really had much interaction with is pretty rare.
We were talking earlier about, you know, what these institutions are supposed to be doing or supposed to look like when there's an emergency. And we are in the midst of two potential emergencies. Over the weekend, the World Health Organization declared the outbreak of the Ebola virus in Central Africa a global health emergency. It's especially concerning because it's a strain for which there is no treatment, nor is there a vaccine. We've also been hearing a lot about hantavirus, which hasn't been a part of the global health conversation, and people are very worried. But as you know, last year, Trump pulled out of the World Health Organization. How does that decision affect our ability and the world's ability to fight global threats moving forward?
It makes it a lot harder, not just for us, but for everybody else. So when the U.S. withdrew from the World Health Organization, and it also rejected something called the International Health Regulations, which is this legal framework that binds countries together and obligates them to report outbreaks. So when the U.S. is not part of those things, it means that we don't hear about outbreaks when everybody else does. To give you an example, with the hantavirus outbreak, there were officials from the World Health Organization, from the European CDC, and from the Dutch Health Ministry on board the ship investigating what had happened, but nobody from the CDC was there. And we didn't find out about it and did not start our response till almost a month after the first patient had died. And everyone I talked to who has been involved in these kinds of outbreaks before talks about how when the US is in the room, they're the leaders. They make everybody move faster, they coordinate, they make things happen. And that was not the case this time. And we're also seeing that play out with Ebola. Again, May 5th is when the WHO found out. CDC has said they found out on May 14th. 9 days in an outbreak that moves this quickly is just an eternity.
Right, especially in a disease with a 50% fatality rate. Let's set aside these global threats, which is hard to do, but we'll do it. How would you rate the preparedness of our current public health system in America?
We have lost a lot of the things we need to be ready for a pandemic. So when there is even a hint of a threat, we used to have several people whose entire job it was to coordinate responses. So we had somebody in the White House, that a role that Congress had created. We had an entire office of pandemic preparedness that also Congress had created. Those things are not filled right now. Those are all vacant. We also don't have a lot of the infectious disease experts that the CDC would normally have. There are fewer people that the CDC has in country offices, you know, all across the world, especially in places like Africa, who would be able to contain an outbreak or at least tell us about it very quickly if it happened. We completely lost USAID, with the U.S. Agency for International Development, which funded much of the surveillance that we used to have to detect outbreaks really early. And when there was an outbreak, USAID was what would go in and coordinate and make sure that, you know, people had the right kind of protective gear. They had the right kind of lab equipment. They would help pay for transport of lab samples. They would train health workers. None of that is happening right now. In quite the same way. Some of it is happening because there are other organizations involved, the WHO, the European CDC, they're trying to do their best, and even the US agencies are providing some support. But none of this is happening at the scale or the speed that we would need to really get on top of an outbreak before it becomes a pandemic.
Apoorva, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
That was my conversation with Apoorva Mandavilli, Science and Global Health reporter at the New York Times. Don't worry, there is news that will not fill you with existential terror coming up, unless you're a big John Cornyn fan. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, watch us on YouTube, and share with your friends. More to come after some ads. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some days feel good and others feel overwhelming. Whatever's keeping you up at night, it's easy to feel like you have to figure it out all on your own. But the truth is, no one has all of the answers, and no journey should be alone. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, a great time to check in with yourself and get the help you need to get where you want to go. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/wad. That's better, HELP.com/wad. This episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack, hydration, and coffee sponsor. IQ Bar Protein Bars, IQ Mix Hydration Mixes, and IQ Joe Mushroom Coffees are the delicious low-sugar brain and body fuel you need to win your day. All IQ Bar products are packed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit, like magnesium, lion's mane, and more. IQ Bar's plant protein bars are the smarter snack choice, with plenty of plant protein, tons of fiber, and no added sugar. IQ Mix is a zero-sugar drink mix that hydrates with electrolytes, improves mood, and boosts clarity. IQ Joe is a mushroom coffee designed for mental clarity and packed with 200 milligrams of natural caffeine. Plus, it comes in 4 different flavors that will totally transform your morning routine. With over 20,000 5-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ Bar's brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all 3. IQ Bars are a delicious part of my post-workout routine. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the Ultimate Sampler Pack, plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text WAD to 64000. Text WAD to 64000. That's WAD to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Here's what else we're following today.
Headlines.
We have to have a safe country. We have to have a great country. We have to make sure that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. All of the things that you see me fighting for so hard.
Actually, I see you fighting for the construction of that $400 million ballroom you're standing in front of. Shouting over the sounds of heavy equipment, Trump said he's giving Iran just days to make progress in negotiations to avoid strikes. He said, quote, "Maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday, something. Maybe early next week. A limited period of time." Sir, you are not scheduling a brunch. Trump covered a lot of ground during that press gaggle.
I'm going to be putting out an endorsement in a little while in Texas, the great state.
And that he did. Trump endorsed Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton ahead of next week's runoff in the Republican Senate primary. Trump's endorsement puts him at odds with his party's establishment, which pushed for incumbent Senator John Cornyn. The Republican nominee will face Democratic State Representative James Tallarico. President Trump's handpicked candidate, Ed Gallarine, defeated Kentucky Republican Representative Thomas Massey in Tuesday's primary. Trump sought to unseat Massey after the 8-term representative broke with him on issues like the release of the Epstein files. The president, who had waged a social media campaign against Massey, posted a photo showing him and Gallerine under the words, "Ed Gallerine wins," endorsed by President Trump. We'll discuss the other winners and losers in Tuesday's primary on tomorrow's show. More than 3,500 stock trades were made on Trump's behalf in the first quarter, according to government filings. It's unclear how much Trump made, but the Financial Times estimates that he made hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's what Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen told What a Day when asked about the trades.
This is by far the most corrupt administration in American history. I mean, Donald Trump has literally turned the White House into a pay-to-play casino. And in this latest example, he is making critical decisions that will have a direct impact on the value of the stocks he's selling. And this is the most blatant example of conflict of interest. That's putting it very mildly.
There's currently bipartisan support in Congress to ban stock trading for members of Congress and the president. We'll see how that goes.
Mr. Attorney General, let me ask you this. Are there going to be rules that say that if you've assaulted a Capitol Hill police officer or committed a violent crime, you will not be eligible? Why not make that a rule?
I expect that, because I'm not one of the commissioners setting up the rules, I expect
that
there will be
four of the five members, aren't you, Mr. Attorney General?
Pardon me?
He's actually appointing all five members. That was Senator Van Hollen during a Senate appropriations hearing on Tuesday. He asked Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche some fun questions about Trump's $1.776 billion anti-weaponization slush fund. During the hearing, Democrats and Republicans both expressed concerns about the obvious pitfalls of a MAGA slush fund. And it turns out, giving more than $1 billion to Trump's backers and allies who claim the Department of Justice has been, quote, weaponized against them, isn't even going over well with conservatives. Both the Wall Street Journal editorial board and the National Review came out against the fund on Tuesday. A judge has ruled that federal agents can no longer make arrests in and around three Manhattan buildings where immigration proceedings occur. The decision on Monday brings an abrupt halt to a Trump administration practice that enabled agents to take into custody people who follow requirements to appear before immigration judges. And that's the news. Before we go, AI is evolving faster than most of us can keep up with, raising big questions about work, power, creativity, and what the future might actually look like. In Assembly Required, Stacey Abrams talks with Katie Drummond from Wired and Timnit Gebru from the Distributed AI Research Institute for a candid conversation about the fears and possibilities surrounding AI. Listen to this episode and future episodes of Assembly Required on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe, leave a review, listen to these University of Central Florida students booing their commencement speaker after she praised AI, and tell your friends to listen.
The rise of artificial intelligence is the next industrial revolution.
And if you're into reading, and not just about how a number of universities have had commencement speakers who bring up AI and AI technologies get heavily booed by graduates, like me. What a Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Jane Costin. And when you're talking to young people you've been telling for the last 5 or so years that AI would destroy their jobs, are you really surprised when they don't like that? Weird. What a Day is a production of Crooked Media. Our show is produced by Caitlin Plummer, Emily Four, Erica Morrison, and Adrian Hill. Our team includes Haley Jones, Greg Walters, Matt Berg, Joseph Dutra, Johanna Case, and Desmond Taylor. Our music is by Kyle Murdoch and Jordan Cantor. We had help today from the Associated Press. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
I'm Nate Silver.
I'm Galen Druk.
And I'm Claire Malone.
We're back, this time with our friends at Crooked Media for a new show called
Still Counting.
Yeah.
Numbers are hard, takes are easy.
And frankly, numbers have only gotten harder.
What does the data actually say? How do we reconcile that with the other things that we're seeing in American politics and around the world? And how do we use that data to understand or maybe even dare to predict the future of American politics?
New episodes every Wednesday starting September 9th. Subscribe to Still Counting on youtube.com/@stillcountingpodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.